The stars. Actually, what about the stars and who had? Why did people get them?
Well, somebody had gone to a tattoo artist and came up with the star, and I can't remember exactly who it was. And I would say maybe it was, can't promise I'm accurate, but about six people. Then they started doing it. And they getting the star tattooed on their wrist. And they tried to get me to do it, and I wouldn't do it. And the main thing that I can think of, the only thing that held me back was because of the job I had at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was depression. I was worried about being fine at why. And I just didn't have it done. And I remember at one time Arlene, who's a woman who's in her 60s, I haven't seen since I got back, told me that this was when the Midtown was going, that the Buffalo police knew about the people who had the stars on their wrists, the lesbians, and they had their names and so forth. That it was an identity type thing with the gay community, with the lesbian community. Huh. And I remember saying to Randy the other night, I see you still have your star. And I said, I just wouldn't get it. And she said, well, you're lucky you didn't. That's all she said. Well, she said, I've regretted it ever since. But I never did find out why she regretted it.
Huh.
But I'd heard different people mention they regretted it. And the only thing that I can think of is why they regretted it is that people would ask them why it was there and not tell them. Not being able to tell them, feel free to tell them. And I think about, I don't know why I didn't do it, because as much as a nonconformist as I always was. And that could have been why, because I was an individualist. I didn't always really want to do everything everybody else did.
Did you know, did all the lesbians have this, or did that crowd...
No, just a little group, a certain group that hung around together.
And did they invent it, or did
they...
It's not something that you would go to another place in the country and find...
No, it ended up with one or two people did it first.
Huh.
And then it was a dare from there on out, and then a couple others. No, others followed. No, it was originated right here.
Oh. I'm just going to check and see if this dog is in the food or if that's a cat.
It was originated with this one little group. I never really was a particular a part of any clique, and I guess that's the best term I can think of for certain groups.
Uh-huh.
I kind of... There were some cliques that I was totally not involved with, or a group of people, whatever way you want to say it, a group of peers, that I kind of was on the fringes. There were some that I tended to lean more to being with. But I always had this thing about being an individual. It was always a little different.
Do you think that that's true of the majority of people you knew in the 50s, the early 60s, or did most people tend to be in cliques?
I would say most people tended to be in cliques. You know, they teamed up with certain peer groups.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I guess thinking in terms of the star, there was even peer pressure. You know, did certain things because the other people did it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess that peer pressure has been around as long as there's been time.
But you yourself found that, did you relate to a lot of cliques then because you weren't in one particular...
Yeah, I related to a lot of different people. Maybe not partially part of cliques. Like I said, it ended up that my best friends were gay men. And I can remember particularly two that I traveled with quite a bit. And one in particular, Billy Yeoman, who's long since left Buffalo. He and I were together quite a bit.
But in terms of women, you weren't that close.
Yes and no. It's not really as far as calling my best friends.
Were there any women from that time that after you left and went to California you kept up correspondence with or phoned? Or?
For a long time, I probably kept in touch with Mary Thomas quite a while.
Huh.
There was a gay man I met in a bar the other night. I had even forgotten he and I used to correspond. And he said, do you remember when we used to write all the time? And so he gave me his address, and we're going to resume our correspondence again.
Huh. Isn't that interesting? And you were here for her 50th birthday?
Yeah, I was very happy that I was able to be here for Mary's 50th birthday.
Huh.
In fact, I think I've never really been age conscious.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you go through periods in your life. Probably the first time my awareness came when my brother died at 48, and I was 46. But when Mary kept saying, well, I'm going to be the big 50, the big 50, and then meeting all these people that you knew years ago, you realize, you know, how time has gone by. Because I don't think of myself in terms of being middle-aged, so to speak. But there's a great consciousness of here. And I think more so, though, because we were all together.
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying, do you remember when we did this? Do you remember when we did that? And then, after, like I said, I find myself saying, you know, we're talking about what we did 20 years ago. And it really sounds strange to talk about.
Huh. Let's say somebody like Bobby, she's 9 years younger than you. Well, you obviously must have known one another then because she recognized you.
Yeah, I knew her, but I didn't know her well.
Was that age that made that difference?
No.
It wasn't?
No. Probably whatever I was into doing at the time, whatever group of people I was into traveling with when I traveled with a group.
Uh-huh.
See, in other words, I guess the best way to phrase it is she wasn't in the circle of friends that I had at that particular time.
But your circle of friends had women of all ages in it?
Now, I guess I would say that if anything, they were about the same age as I or younger.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know Black Jan is younger than I am. I think when I first met her, she was around 19, and I probably was 24.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them, there was a group that were in their teens, and then probably the rest of us were in our early 20s or middle 20s.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And
but then I was still out, you know, into my 30s in Buffalo, because it's easy to figure my age. I was born in 1930, so in 1962 I was 32.
Right, so you spent your 20s here mm-hmm. and your early 30s and left. And Mary was in the same set, was she?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to remember, because I got a little fuzzy, you met Mary actually before you were...
When we were kids.
Right, mm-hmm. before you were gay.
Way back to when the Civic Stadium first opened mm-hmm. up many years ago.
And so then when you came into the bars in Buffalo, that's when you realized that she was also gay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great to see a familiar face, somebody you knew before.
Huh, that must have been quite an experience. Yeah.
There's another woman, she lives in Canada now, but she went to the same grammar school I did, and I remember she was... I came back when I came home from the Army one time and visit, and she was still in grammar school. I remember looking at her and saying, I bet she's going to grow up to be one. And I ran into her in the bars years later, too.
Hmm. And so, and of that set of people who you ran with a little bit, even though you weren't tight into the clique, are they all still in Buffalo now?
Well, some. You know, I've heard, too, about some that have passed away and some that are... I've asked about some of them, even though I haven't been here that long to really know if they're still coming off the bars.
Mm-hmm.
Probably if I was going to go out New Year's Eve, that would be a time to find out, but I'm not going.
Uh-huh.
You know, because a lot of people come out. I've had people mention different people
uh-huh.
that are still around, and also telling about some of the people that passed on or different things like that,
uh-huh.
what they're doing with their lives.
Now, was your the set of people you read with, was Mary the only black woman in it? Is nope. Black Jan also black?
No.
She's not. No. She just got that name.
She had black hair, and I think because of her reputation.
Oh, you mean like she was black in spirit?
I don't even know how she ever did come up with Black Jan. Oh, there was another Jan, that's why.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
That's how the other name, like Dirty Bobby, Hamburg Bobby, Jan Papa Jay, Black Jan, they were both at the same time. Yeah, Mary was, as far as I can remember. Never thought of Mary as being black.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Never thought of her. Because I didn't know, you know, I was, like I tell people, I was brought up, I didn't think in terms of prejudice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because I was brought up in, I ended up going to Maston Park High School. Like I always tell people, it was one-third black, one-third Jewish, and one-third a mixture of everything else. You didn't think in terms of prejudice. Didn't hear all that garbage until later.
Right. Do you remember, like, in Dugan's and Pat's and Carousel, were they integrated bars in the 50s? Like, were there black lesbians in there as well as white lesbians?
No, I don't think that the black lesbian was that visible.
Huh. Where do you think they were going?
I have no idea, other than to, of course, it's not, I don't know if it's still the same Buffalo, but there were the black bars, and we used to go to them sometimes. Because we like the music, and we're an adventurous crowd. You know, we didn't only go once in a while. We'd go to non-gay bars, and then we were going to black bars. But I don't remember ever really seeing a lot of black people that were visible.
So when you went to the black bars, they weren't black gay bars. They were just black
right.
bars yeah. for the music.
Right.
And do you think that you went there mainly? Not mainly, but do you think the fact that Mary was a friend of yours influenced that? Or?
No, influenced it. Because I didn't think of her in terms of being black. In fact, we didn't use the term black.
What kind of music did they have in the black?
Jazz,
and that's what you all like.
Whenever we went to a black bar, we were treated okay. The black people didn't seem to be prejudiced against gay people.
Hmm.
I was thinking about something, talking about the butch and the femme era. I remember one time when I went with Pauline, Because I like to, and also to blow other people's minds. Every once in a while on a Friday or Saturday night, we dress up in heels and the whole bit.
Oh, yeah. So both of you would dress up in heels. Yeah. And that would challenge people's image of you as a butch. Is that the idea?
As a person.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And what did people think about that?
Well, at first they were probably surprised and shocked, but after a while I didn't think any big deal about it. It probably, underlying was a way of getting attention. To be noticed.
Was there competition? Well, first of all, were mainly the people you ran with more butches?
Most of them had mates or partners.
They did, huh? And then their mates and partners would be part of the group.
When they went out, well, most of them, I guess you wouldn't call it the butches in those days, were a lot of them went out on their own. They were allowed to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so that's why a lot of the friendships would be butch friendships. That's probably different from now.
I'm surprised, maybe it's just my own appearance and Jean's appearance, but that it's obvious that so many of the people are still into roles here. And you go out to the West, like Arizona and California, and you don't see that anymore.
You don't,
In fact, I was telling Jean about this story. There's a woman that I talked to here. And she was going on one night about how she always cared for me, but because I was a butch, she knew that we could never make it and all that. And I recalled when she was talking, I was thinking about the first time I ever met her. I can't remember the name of the bar. It was another one that's open and closed. I came back from California, and I'd gotten in the habit of carrying a purse. And I got out of my car, and I was getting ready to go over the bar, and she screamed over, hollered over at me, "Hey, butch, your purse is showing." And my response to her was, "I know what I am. Do you know what you are?" And when I went into the bar, she came up and started apologizing and all this. And I said, "I'm going to tell you the same thing again. I know what I am. Do you know what you are?" And what I was saying indirectly is, I don't need labels.
Huh. And was she doing that kind of to be insulting or to put...
I have no idea. I have no idea. Because I know she always respected me afterwards.
Well, when
it's
you...
It's back to the image, you know. The butch doesn't carry a purse.
Well, when you say that people are still into roles here, what is it that you notice that
their
tells...
Their appearance. Masculine haircuts. The way they dress.
Anything else?
I guess
else?
Probably, this is stereotyping. I'm doing it myself. The best example I could probably give you, because that's where it's at, because I'm stereotyping. I just realized that.
Uh-huh.
One time I was in group therapy up here at the Buffalo VA Hospital.
Uh-huh.
And it was a time when the bouffant hairdos were in style.
Uh-huh.
And I wore a semi-bouffant, but my hair was short in the back here, and probably just little spit curls here in the front, just enough to not make it look masculine. And pantsuits had just come out. Well, I was always with the long pants, as I told you a long time ago. My mother said she'd burn my blue jeans. And I remember I had a brown pantsuit on, and I went into group, and they jumped you right away, and they say, "Now, what is your problem?" And I remember saying that I am a homosexual and I wish to inform you of such, but I want to inform you that I don't have any guilt feelings. And this was before men had the long hair. And this guy said to me, "I knew you were a lesbian because you had short hair." And my immediate response to him was, "Well, then that makes you one too." And it goes to how we're still guilty of stereotype. And that's kind of what I just realized what I'm talking about that I've been doing. But I don't know, I guess it's the way they carry themselves, the way they act, and besides the short hair and the dress. When Jean noticed it, because she's been in California for a long time, in Arizona, and you don't see the stereotyping, the little, the roles is what I'm saying. To clarify it, you're talking about the butch and the femme. I used to always say, even way back when women didn't say that they were women, that I was a woman first. I always took pride in saying that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I've been kind of sensitive to the term butch all the time, even though that's what I was and supposed to be. It had to do with appearance.
Well, way back in the 50s, what else was the would characterize you as a butch besides your clothes? Were the things that you had to do...
Right. One of the things was sexuality.
When
it came to sexual, butches were untouchable, so to speak. They did all the lovemaking, but love was not made back to them. And after I found out how different it was and how great it was, I said, "What was I missing?" And I remember a friend of mine that I had, I've asked about her, who dressed like a man and all her life. And when she would go to a non-gay bar, she wouldn't go to the bathroom because she wasn't comfortable in the men's room, and she wouldn't go to the women's room because the women would freak out. And I remember talking to Phil and saying to her, "You know, you got to stop being an untouchable butch. And she just couldn't agree. And I remember one time reaching over and pinching her, and I said, did you feel that? And she said, yes. And I said, it hurt, didn't it? I said, well, why aren't you willing to feel something that's good?
Huh.
That was one of the things that was, I guess, expectations of peer pressure. It was one of the things.
How did you learn that that was the butch role? Did people tell you that in the Army?
I don't know.
You can't
remember? It was instinct or what it was, I don't know.
Nobody ever sat down and said, well, if you know, butchers...
I think it was just something that was accepted.
Huh.
But the thing that I have observed all my life, in fact, I told this story back in Venice, California. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's very gay in the summertime. It's a beach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I used to live right in Venice on the beach. I was telling this non-gay man that I know, a friend of mine one time, I said, wait till summer comes around. I said, you think you're confused now? I said, you see these big bad butches coming out on the beach, and they got tattoos and short hair and a t-shirt, and they'll be walking with this really pretty feminine woman. And there's about three kids walking alongside of them. And one of the kids says, Mommy, and it's the big bad butch, it turns around. And that was very prevalent. And I've often thought about maybe it's because of sexual needs and because of expectations that the butch would not get sexually involved with the woman, but every so often they'd go with a man, and that there was really something. And it seemed that way. It was always the so-called butch that end up pregnant.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, was it in the 60s when you learned about to stop only making love to a woman but also to be made love to, or was it early?
It was with Gordy that I learned.
Huh. And she,
it would be in the 50s.
And did she teach you?
No, we just...
tried it one time.
You know.
What do you think about that relationship broke the ice to try it?
I don't remember.
Do you think most people tried it?
That's hard to say. I wouldn't feel safe in making a statement on that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I would say yes, because they're human beings. Either that or they're missing a lot.
Huh. Did you ever talk about it with your butch friends?
Yeah, there was, like I told you about, that I learned more about sexuality. It was this Arlene that I mentioned to her. Every time she'd find a new way to make love, she'd tell me about it, and I'd go home, and Gordy and I'd try it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I talked to her quite a bit. We talked quite a bit about it.
And so she felt it was all right, and
mm-hmm.
human, that it went
right.
Both ways. Huh? Was that pretty general for your set, that people would experiment a little bit and not be into?
I don't know, because they didn't talk about it that
Never
much.
Never talked.
Unless you were really close to somebody.
Hmm.
I guess it was more or less expected that butches were untouchable.
And you can't remember who taught you?
No, I don't know if it was instinct or what it was, whatever.
What about that first woman in the Army who told you what you're supposed to do? Did she tell you that that's...
I didn't ask she didn't tell me, because I wasn't even aware that there was any difference. Because I was just really learning a little bit more about gay life.
Because it's a mystery to me how people learned that mm-hmm. butches were untouchable.
Well, I guess that's almost like saying, how do we learn that we're gay? It's a mystery. What makes us gay? Just
uh-huh.
as much.
You think it's the same thing, huh?
No, but I mean, giving an example.
Huh.
Like when you asked me, did I know I was gay when I was younger? And I said, not that I was aware of. And I don't know if it's because I wasn't subjected to gay people. Unlearned or what it was. But I knew it was different.
Huh. Still, it's a mystery to me, because I can understand how people come to, you know, learn that they're gay, but I can't understand how butches learn that they're untouchable. That's
I don't either.
It's a mystery. I don't understand that.
But that was vogue in those days.
Those were the vogue, huh?
I remember we used to joke about it once in a while.
Do you think...
untouchable butch.
Do you think it still goes on a lot today in Buffalo?
As much as it would anywhere, because it has to do with individuality. Although, thinking about it in the second thought, I think people are more aware of sexuality now
mm-hmm.
than they were years ago. Because, let's face it, people look at sex differently than they did then.
That's right.
20
okay.
years ago, I don't know if we'd have sat down and had a conversation like we're having now. I might have ran in the opposite direction.
Right.
And you might have ran if I asked you to talk about it.
Right. It's true.
It just has to do with the changing times.
Hmm. Well,
the women's movement, I think, has a lot to do with eradicating the roles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, what did you... When you and your friends were together and you experienced solidarity and doing things together, what were the kinds of things that you did together? Talk, play ball?
Bar rooms were the way of life.
It was the way of life.
It was the way of life.
Huh, that's interesting. And did you ever go to the beaches together or to picnics together? Or?
No, on a very rare occasion.
And what was it that you liked about the bars?
That's where you met gay people. That's where you were among your friends. I think it's a place where you could let your hair down. You know, you could really be yourself.
And, like, you had your close friends, a circle of friends. Were you, when you went to the bar, you would always join them. Is that what it
usually,
was?
You know, usually. If you sat in a table or a booth, it was always usually the same people that you sat with.
And when fights broke out, did people in the same circle fight one another, or did people often fight people from different circles?
Probably different circles. In fact, I would say different circles because they wouldn't remain friends very long. If people were, there were people that you would tend to fight with, then you stayed away from them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you stayed your distance.
Mm-hmm. And
one of the things that was extremely prevalent during that time, and I became very guilty of it too, was, you know, hustling the non-gay man that came around looking, I hate to put it so blunt, but the way they used to say they come in looking to eat pussy. And say, okay, sucker, I'll get you, but you're not going to get me. There was a couple women I knew that actually went out and slept with the guys, but I never did. My little trick was get them drunk enough and then get their money, and I never left the bar alone.
Huh.
And I'm not proud of these things, but these are the past, and they're over. But I remember one little game that I decided to do was, there was this one guy who was flashing all this money, and of course, there were those of us who were around just waiting. Everybody was trying to get this dude, and I was, so I thought of this idea, well, I'll go home with him, and I'll let him think that he's going to sleep with me. But I'll tell him I got to go take a bath first, and meanwhile he'll pass out. And that happened, and I got over $500 and some from the guy. Went home, showered, changed my clothes, and went out that night, and he came and he started screaming at me in the bar that I rolled him and all that. And I said, I've never seen you before in my life, fucker. Get out of here. I said, you keep this up, and I'm going to call the police. Looked at him right in the face, because it was him and me, and he couldn't prove it. And I did that on three occasions, and I was confronted twice by the guys that did it. But it was, I was never frightened. Because it was me and him, and he couldn't prove it. It was a little game. Get him good and drunk, and I'd say, well, I'm going to go take a bath because I want to be clean. And as soon as they passed out, I'd take their money and run.
Huh. And was there some protection when these guys confronted you for your friends? Were your friends around?
Well, they wouldn't get into it, even if they knew it. Because some of them were doing the same thing, except for some of them were actually sleeping with the guys. It was only on three occasions that I did that. I would never even leave the bar with them.
Do you think it was kind of that kind of outwitting or outsmarting these guys that also brought you and your circle of friends together?
Yeah.
To keep things solidary.
I went through another stage at one time. Dugan's was really known for fighting. And so that was mixed. There'd be a lot of these kind of guys going up there. They'd get into a barroom fight or a street fight, and I'd pretend that I was trying to calm him down, and while the guy was fighting, I'd lift his wallet. Because, you know, they're being hit and pushed so much, I didn't know the difference.
And then when you get this money, what would you use it on? Your house?
Whatever I felt like at the time. Probably drank and partied with it, or if I needed it for something.
Because you were
working.
But
see, there's one thing that I did. I didn't let the other people know when I did this, my friends. Some of them would know when they were doing it, but I didn't let them know.
Did you ever discuss it with close friends afterward?
Well, just this one person. I remember Arlene. She and I used to go to, like you asked if we ever went to some other bars, and I said, yeah, we go to these street bars. Because I used to be able to con these guys into giving me money. And it was always that we were supposed to do it 50-50. Well, I was always getting the money and giving her half, and she never gave me any. So one day I got wise and said, this is baloney. I'm going to stop this. But I was never happy when I did that. It was a challenge, and I had to be drunk to do it. You know, I couldn't do it unless I'd been drunk.
Did the challenge come from yourself or from peer pressure as well?
I think myself.
But there wasn't any kind of...
Yeah, my rationale for doing it was, well, if I don't do it, somebody else will.
Right.
Because they come in and set themselves up for it. That's why I tell the people in my church, I said, you think you know me now. I have cleaned my act up so much you don't begin to know.
And you all never would boast to one another about how good you were at things and stuff. Your friends, that wasn't part of the things you'd do when you were drinking?
Once in a while, particularly Arlene, because that was her way of life. She never worked. That's where she got her money was from. It was always believed that she went out with the guys. I don't know. I can't prove it. But that was where she got her money.
In your circle of friends, did the majority of you work?
Mm-hmm.
The majority did. Huh?
Yeah, it was just short periods that I didn't work. That was, like I told you, in between when I couldn't get jobs because of my lack of formal education.
Right.
But once I got down to working regular for a living, I didn't do that kind of stuff anymore.
So when you all with your friends were in the bar and you'd be chatting and stuff, like, what would it be that would you just be passing the time of day talking about what was going on, you know?
Yeah, whatever the subject was at the time. Uh-huh. I remember we used to dance a lot in those days, too.
Uh-huh.
A lot of dancing.
What was, let's see, in the 50s, what
kind of... Jitterbug.
Right,
Jitterbug and slow dancing. But, you know, I can't recall what we talked about because that's so long ago. But whatever was happening at the time was all I can think of. Probably was never anything really important.
Do you think people talked more than now?
Yeah, I would say so. Mm-hmm. One of the things is that, it's Arlene, I keep bringing her up, has said about me that I was kind of unique. She said she had never seen anybody like me, that I would get down, you know, down on my luck and down on my life, but I'd never stay there. And that whenever I came up, I always came up higher. And I still do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I'd be down to no money and I'd be out there hustling. Next thing you know, I had a good job and I was doing all right.
Mm-hmm. Would you hustle when you were working too?
Oh, no.
So you would not roll these guys when you were working. I see.
That was when if I remember right, I mostly did it when I first got out of the service.
Uh-huh. But still, even when you weren't hustling guys and you were working, you would still go to the same bars to be with your friends.
If they wanted to buy me drinks, I'd let them buy me drinks because that meant money you saved.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. What would you try?
I always enjoyed people. Sometimes I enjoyed talking to these people, these non-gay men, and I ended up becoming friends with them when I wasn't out to take advantage of them.
What would determine whether you went to the Carousel or to Dugan's a night? Or did you go to all of them every night?
No, I didn't go to all of them every night. It depended upon the night, I guess, how many people would be there. You want to be where the people were,
uh-huh.
where the action was, so to speak.
Uh-huh. And what would be action?
People. To me, yeah. Whether it be busy, crowded.
Did Femmes ever come in alone to these bars?
I can't recall. I imagine they did. That's how they met. A lot of them met their mates because that was the only way to do it.
Right, so that if a femme came in alone, that means she was looking. Mm-hmm. Is that it? In other words,
and all the butchers started looking too. You know,
right,
who's that new one?
What was happening? Huh. That's amazing that you were monogamous all that time with Gordy.
I always was. It's really, you know, I was kind of strange even in those days.
Were most of your friends like that or not?
Some of them were, and some of them weren't. And if they weren't, most of them didn't talk about it, unless you saw them, you know, in action with somebody. There was a period, I just happened to think about it, there was some of the so-called butches that got a big charge out of going to the places where they had burlesque.
Uh-huh,
uh-huh. And I used to go with them once in a while, but it never did that much for me. They really liked to go where they had the burlesque shows. That's before they had the topless and all that. It was the strip teasers.
Down on Main Street?
Place where the Betsy is now used to be a place like that at one time.
Huh.
Or somewhere in that area there was one. Back to the old burlesque theater, down on foot of Main Street years ago.
Right.
They got a big charge out of that. I never did.
You mentioned before that sometimes you would bring women home from the bar. That kind of strikes...
And gay men, too.
And gay men.
Yeah.
That strikes me as kind of a maternal role or an aunt-like role. Is that the reputation you had?
No.
No?
No. I had a reputation of trying to help people when they needed it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've always been a sensitive person, and I think it was because basically I was sensitive to other people's needs. And I don't like to see anybody downcast or put out.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it was just because I liked the company.
Because
not everybody didn't have a place to stay.
Mm. Did that upset Gordy?
If it did, she never spoke about it, other than the fact that, like I told you previously, that she said she knew people that brought home stray animals, and she never knew anybody like me that brought home stray people all the time.
Hmm.
No, because I used to wake her up and say, get up and fix us something to eat, and she'd do it. I'm sure it bothered her, but she never expressed the feelings about it.
And in the bars, like, could a femme ask a butch to dance, or would it have to always be a butch asking a femme to dance?
That's difficult for me to recall.
Huh.
Not having, you know, played the feminine role. It's really kind of hard for me. I remember there was a period when I came back here in the middle 60s. It was a bar up on Niagara. I can't remember the name of it. And I was not going with anybody. and didn't want to get involved. I remember I used to go up and ask a woman to dance, and I had a line. I'd say, "Hi, my name is Buff. I don't want to fall in love, and I'm not going to ask you to get married. I just want to dance."
Huh.
Because usually that meant, at least to me, it meant that if somebody was asking somebody to dance, they were making a pass. I remember back in those days that if there was a so-called butch and so-called femme together, that if another butch wanted to dance with the femme, they asked the butch if it was okay.
Right.
They didn't just go up and ask the person to dance, because if they did, that would be immediate trouble.
It'd be a fight.
Yeah. Again, a peer pressure.
Would most
certain rules.
Right. What were some other of those rules? Can you remember?
Not offhand, you know, just as they crop in my head. That's the only thing I think.
What did a butch wear in those days when she went out?
Men's clothes.
Men's clothes. Did she wear a jacket?
Well, I don't know. Again, it depended on the individual choice. Even though I wore men's clothes, I always wore colorful type clothes.
Uh-huh.
So I remember in the summertime one time I had a lavender top, you know, light yellow and stuff like that. Just regular men's clothes.
Huh. And when you went to work, did you wear the same clothes?
Well, like I was telling you in the bar that one night, when I worked for the child care center, I used to wear men's shirts, but I wore skirts.
Oh, that's right. You told me that. I forgot that. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you got it.
Had a DA haircut, but you know, if you put lipstick on, that was all right.
And did you think it was funny?
No, no.
People
just
thought
part
it was
of my way of life. Nobody ever accepted me for me.
Huh.
If they thought it, they never told me. You know, it never interfered in my job.
And did Gordy wear women's clothes then?
Yeah. She was very petite and very feminine.
And she never wore pants or anything.
Well, slacks.
She wore slacks sometimes.
In fact, when I worked for child care center, I took the kids on overnight trips or weekend trips. I had to have another adult with me. And she used to go, and she was accepted. Nobody ever questioned. Whether they knew or not, I don't know. It's almost like a man and wife. They accepted her as part of my life.
Hmm.
And I see this happening even today, where some people, if two lesbians are living together or two gay men, they have that second bedroom that's never used because they don't want anybody to know they're sleeping together.
Right.
I never did that. We always had one bedroom, and I never thought anything about it. Until one person brought it up one time. I said, "Well, it doesn't bother me. They can think what they want."
Huh. You mentioned before that you went to a group therapy session at the VA. Is that where it was? You said you were
Buffalo Bay.
Was that during the 50s?
No, that was in 66.
After you had been to California and...
Yeah, my first very serious suicide attempt was in California. And after that had happened, I went to the hospital voluntarily.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned, I was married to a gay man, and there was a convenience who ended up being an SOB. He had me committed at that time, which they can't do anymore. And I said, he tried to have me committed, but I signed a waiver, and I said, how can this happen when I came here voluntarily? And that's before psychiatry has made the improvements it's made now. I've been back to that hospital just the first part of December just to see some people. And I still talk about that. I can remember when it was a real insane asylum, where the violent were put in with the nonviolent, and you could see them wheel people in for electrical shock. And because I was on what was called S-status suicide, I had to sleep on this one end of the building where they had lights on your bed at night. And if you were a good girl, you got off S-status in 2 weeks. And if you're a very, very good girl, you got to move downstairs. And at that time, they put me on a heavy dose of Meloril, which I wasn't aware at the time what it was doing to me. My mother still talks about when I came back home, when I was still on Meloril, that I looked like I was going to cry all the time. And I slept. I was from the couch to the bed. And I was really withdrawn. And I would try to converse with people, and I couldn't. And inside, I was really aching. And then I finally got off the medication, and my mother got mad. That's what motivated me. Got very angry at me because I wasn't doing it around the house. And then I came out of it, and I went to work at Children's Hospital. And I had an auto accident, and then I went into some heavy drinking and then became suicidal again, and that's when I ended up in the hospital here. I was in and out of mental hospitals for over 10 years. And one of the things that I learned, I was talking about the self-destructiveness. I've learned some of the things that triggered this self-destructiveness, not always suicide, but other ways. It had to do with my relationship with my mother. And I was a periodic drinker. I would go into periodic long bouts of drinking. And that's when I became more suicidal and would actually attempt it. And as we say, since I put the cork in the bottle, I don't have these problems. Mm-hmm. I feel that I could drink sociably, but I won't do it because I don't want to take the chance again. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've told Jean I resent her sometimes, but she's a recovering alcoholic too. Yeah, that I can't take a drink because if I do, see, I'm using her for an excuse. That if I do, then she'll start, and then she admits that she couldn't control. Because I can remember when I used to go in the bars and I'd say I'm only going to have two beers, and nobody could talk me into another. But I went through periods of long bouts of drinking, and it was, you know, I don't give a damn. I call it a case of the fuckets. And I would get deeper in debt, and things would just pile up.
Had this surfaced in the 50s when you were with your friends and in the bars, or did it only come out about in the 60s?
My first suicide attempt was when I was in the Army in Germany. But then it wasn't until in the 60s in California.
Huh. Have you ever figured out why there was that long break?
Other than that, I must have been content, you know, some contentment within myself. But the first real, very serious suicide attempt, the one that I'm surprising I'm alive to tell you about, I took 30 sleeping pills and 30 Valium on a belly full of beer.
And this was in Germany?
No,
in California.
California, 1965. And the doctor, I came out of it. I remember waking up in the hospital with IV and tied down full of catheters, came out ripping everything out. And I asked the doctor the next day, why did I do that? I should have known better. And he told me that I was angry I was alive, that I really wanted to die.
How did you...
That's why I say MCC has helped me. I feel like a whole person, which obviously I didn't then.
How did you find that the medical profession treated you as a gay woman, or didn't they know?
They didn't know. If they did, they didn't talk about it.
Hmm. So you don't know whether you would have been treated?
No, I don't know.
It never came up. Hmm. And would it be right to say...
Look at me. Give him one another.
Would it be right to... Do you think that it was the closeness of your friends in the 50s and the good relationship with Gordy that had you so that you weren't attempting suicide? Mm-hmm. Well, what happened in the 60s? Was it the shift to California that meant that friends
No, at the time I thought it was because of a broken love affair. That I couldn't live without this one person. But through therapy and through the period of years and more awareness, I found out it was I didn't think much of myself. I had a low self-esteem.
And it's, but you must have had the same low self-esteem in the 50s, because...
Not really.
Huh. So what do you think lowered
it? I guess it was
then?
A sense of community in the 50s.
That
prevented it. It was a sense of community.
And was it because you were a foreigner in California that meant you didn't have a sense of community?
No.
Were times different?
That's really difficult to answer. And the only thing is I know about myself now, I have more awareness and I know certain things that would trigger me into doing certain things that I can deal with them. I couldn't deal with what was happening.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I've had periods.
Like, I remember certain behavior patterns. You know, you get into this pattern and to be able to break them through an awareness. And any time I had ever tried suicide, I never told anybody. I was all by myself. I was alone. It wasn't something that I was doing for attention. I remember one time I took a bunch of pills and I turned on the gas and couldn't even go to sleep. Now, how do you tell somebody the next day that you're sicker than a dog from this, and every time you open your mouth you taste the gas? I had to go to work like that for about a week because I lived.
When you went to California, did you ever develop a community of friends like you had here in Buffalo?
Yeah, I did, but I don't think it was the same as Buffalo. I was telling a woman that was in the bar the other night who was here from California, an older woman, she was here for 4 days. I asked her if she had the same problem I did when I went there. When I first went there, I was very uncomfortable, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And I realized that I felt that I didn't have an identity there that I had in Buffalo. You know, going down the street and always running into somebody that you knew. There was a certain amount of distance. It was very hard to get in with the people in California. And especially when, you know, you were in that pecking order in a city and then you leave it.
When you say you're in a pecking order in a city in Buffalo, what do you mean by that?
Your circle of friends, your peers, certain peers.
And what's the pecking order mean?
Well, I've always said I consider myself kind of top. I know I was always a leader. I didn't...
Can you talk more about that? Because that would be important.
No, it all goes back to what I've been saying to you about being an individual.
And people respected that? Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like, you know, it amazes me that I can come back today after being gone so long, and people still remember my name. Everybody I run into remembers my name. So it tells you, I made some kind of impression. Whether it was good or bad, haven't had anybody come up to me yet and said, I know you, what is your name? Or I've had to look at people and sit back and wait for them to say their name first.
Well, what is it that made, that's an important thing, if you're saying that you were a leader, the qualities were...
A leader or an individual. I was a strong individualist.
Mm-hmm. And that's what people respected.
I don't know. I can't tell you. That's what they respected.
You never figured that out.
But I would have a feeling that would be...
It could be also your generosity. Did you think that? Helping people? So it means you weren't... Were you much of a fighter?
No, I didn't like to fight. If necessary, I would, but I didn't like to.
So were there some people who were respected for fighting? Or was that never something that people respected?
I would have to be telling what other people think, so I couldn't answer that honestly.
Because you didn't respect people for fighting, is that what you mean?
I can't say I respected them or didn't respect them. I just, it was their thing. It wasn't mine. If necessary, I could take care of myself. Recently, when I went up for relicensing as a minister in the Universal Fellowship, one of the things they said to me, there was one word that would describe you that you would like to be remembered for in the fellowship of Metropolitan Community Churches. What was it? And I think it would be the same thing if you were to ask me what I'd like to be remembered in Buffalo. And I said, stick-to-itiveness.
Oh, yeah.
And I stuck to my guns and whatever I believed. And they said, a survivor. And I said, that's right. And they agree that I'm a survivor because I've gone through some things as a minister that other people would have thrown their hands up and quit. Huh. I've never been a quitter. I always like challenges.
That's an important thing if the community respected stick-to-itiveness and surviving.
In those days you had to survive. And I think that's where I learned it.
Were some people good storytellers and some people were...
I didn't think about this a long time, but I remember when I went to California, we used to sit in the bars and tell... I guess you'd call them dirty stories by the hour. That was part of the pastime.
Uh-huh.
You'd tell jokes back and forth, and then one would remind you could sit there for a whole evening. And I was well known for being able to... Oh, by the way, that reminds me of one.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And you all could tell stories. I think that's something that young people today don't do very
much. No, they don't
much.
Do it. No,
they can be... I've noticed that in parties I've been to, that the old-timers can... as the evening goes on, tell you some really good stories, and young people are just sitting there very quiet.
I have my favorite Christmas joke, is I don't care what your name is, fat boy, get your reindeer off my roof.
That's cute. Okay, Lizzie, you know what I don't have anything on is your family at all. Like, you were born in Buffalo?
Mm-hmm. I was born at Mount Mercy Hospital.
Oh, yeah, in South Buffalo. And you were raised in South Buffalo?
In the early years, the first ward.
Oh, yeah. And then you moved into the...
We lived on Walnut Street. I remember living on Michigan Avenue near High when World War II broke out.
Mm-hmm.
And then we moved over to Herman and Genesee Street where I lived until I went in service. In the middle 50s, my mother and brother bought a home in Chickawaga, which I was, I guess you'd call it, say I was a black sheep. I was very much... independent and individual sin. I left home at 19 and didn't spend too much time at home after that. I was always on my own. Because of unhappy home life, my mother and I conflicted too much.
Mm-hmm. Were there just the two of you, your brother and you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
And you were younger?
Yeah, I was 2 years younger.
And your mother was separated from the time you were...
About three.
So did you ever know your father?
Yeah, he lived in Toronto, Canada.
And did you ever see him?
From time to time.
Huh.
I'm not close to him now.
And, you and your mother never got on. How about you and your brother?
There was a lot of pure rivalry. Was later in years, I had an argument with my mother one time, and I said to her, I realize that Jack has always come first and always will, and she told me I was right. I think one of the reasons, one of my problems, going back to having some emotional problems, was I always loved my mother and wanted her to love me and didn't feel that she did.
Mm-hmm.
And, I always worked hard at getting along with her. There were periods where we got along good. In fact, she used to go to the gay bars with me after she learned to accept it with Gordy and I on the weekends.
Huh.
And she knew a lot of my gay friends. But we get along better now because one of the things I've learned is not to react to everything she says. She tends to still be, not as much as, like I've told her, she's happier now than I've ever known her. She's 74 years old. But she always had a lot of anger. I can see that now. I didn't know that. She was a very bitter woman. And it used to carry over to me.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one time when I was about 14, 15 years old, I was always told I look like my mother, mm-hmm. even now. And when she's, like I said, she's kind of a screamer and a little bit violent. And one time she called me a stupid-looking son of a bitch. And with a smile on my face, I said, "But Ma, everybody said I look like you." Well, don't you know, all hell broke loose. I thought it was funny. My mouth has always gotten me in trouble. When we got along very good. When we didn't, we didn't. There were 6 months out of a year that I wouldn't speak to her, she wouldn't speak to me.
And you were still living at home when that would happen?
There was a time that I, since I'd been in California, that I came back to Buffalo to visit, and I'd be here a week before I'd look her up so I could go around and visit all my friends, and I'd just call her and tell her I just got in town.
Hmm. Was she working all the time because she was raising you all?
Yeah. You remember World War II was, mm-hmm. was my teen, I guess you'd say my formative years. And she worked for Curtis Wright and my brother worked for the A&P from the time he was 14. So I did the cooking and the housework and all that. And she wasn't home very much. She used to go out a lot. I remember one year I was home and she said to me, "I don't understand how people can sit on bar stools every night."